search in passing. It was already past 8 o'clock when Dad's colleagues, Uncle Tian and his wife, Aunt Wu, came to visit. They had not come for several months, and things were very different now. Mom did not make her famous beef soup, and Grandma did not make steamed buns. They barely greeted us children when they came in. Instead of loud, lively chatter and jovial laughter, their conversation was all hushed whispers. As soon as they mentioned the current situation, Dad told us to go downstairs to play with my little cousin, Hua Hua. We went reluctantly. Hua Hua was sleepy and did not want to play patty cake or any of our usual games, but we stayed at my fourth aunt's apartment until we heard the footsteps going down the stairs. It was late. We were getting ready for bed when Dad talked to us. "Children, tomorrow I want you to go to the park with Grandma. You'll have to take something for lunch." "Grandma's been sick," I thought. "Is this so she can rest?"
"A picnic," Ji-Yun shouted. "Oh, boy!"
"That's right," Dad answered. "A picnic." His voice sounded odd somehow. "You all go and have a good time." The morning was still relatively cool when we set off for the park, but the sun was bright, and it was sure to be hot before long. I carried a book and a bag that rattled with the dishes we had packed for lunch. Ji-Yong and Ji-Yun skipped ahead and were already running across the grass by the time Grandma and I arrived. The park was almost empty. A few old men sat on benches playing chess, and in the shady places, some old people did Tai Chi exercises. We strolled around the lawn, and then Grandma picked a shaded bench and pulled out her knitting.
"You go ahead and play," she said. "I'll be right here."
"Let's play tag," Ji-Yun said excitedly. We had not been to the park in ages, and the three of us raced around the nearly deserted paths, having a wonderful time. We were evenly matched. Ji-Yun may have been the youngest, but she was very fast. Grandma called us to lunch. It was hot now. We gladly rested in the shade while she unpacked hard-boiled eggs and made sandwiches for us. We ate and shared a bottle of juice. We laughed about a trip the whole family had taken to another park last spring when Ji-Yong had dropped the knife out of a rowboat, so we had to eat our apples without peeling them. Finally, Ji-Yong and Ji-Yun lay down on some benches and went to sleep. I helped Grandma tidy up before sitting down to read my book. Grandma took out her knitting again, but did not set to work. Instead, she sighed and stared into space. Her face was pale. I put my hand on her shoulder. She turned to me and smiled a little.
"Don't worry about me. I'm fine. I've just been worrying too much."
She took my hand and patted it gently. "Every time I hear drums and gongs, I'm afraid that they're coming to our house. My heart starts racing, and the closer they come, the worse it gets. Now, after seeing poor old Tian kneeling on that washboard, I haven't been able to sleep. As soon as I close my eyes, I see the Red Guards coming in. I couldn't bear it if they made me kneel like that, or if they beat me." She smiled sadly. "Your father and Uncle Tian thought this would help me relax. I can sit in the park all day, and then, even if the Red Guards come, I'll be safe here."
"But what if the Red Guards are at our house when we get back?"
"Your father thought of that, too. Did you see the mop on the balcony? That's our sign. If the Red Guards come, the mop won't be there, and I'll know not to go in."
I was intrigued by the idea of secret signs, but I was scared, too. I glanced around to see if someone was watching us.
"It's really not much of a solution," Grandma went on. "I can't stay here all night, and I can't even stay in the park every day for months. Really, I just hope that I'll get used to the situation. I won't have to come here anymore."
She shook her head sadly. The breeze blew a strand of hair over her ear, and I gently patted it back into place. She had more gray in her hair, I noticed, and more wrinkles on her face. "She doesn't seem like a landlord's wife," I suddenly thought.
In the movies, the landlord's wife was ugly, cruel, and stupid. Grandma was beautiful, kind, and smart. I remembered coming home from kindergarten and showing Grandma the songs and dances we had learned. Grandma sat before us with her knitting, nodding her head in time to the music. Sometimes we insisted that she sing with us, and she would join in with an unsteady pitch and heavy Tianjin accent, wagging her head and moving her arms just as we did. When we tired of singing, we would pester Grandma to show us her feet. When she was young, it was the custom to tightly bind girls' feet in bandages to make them as small as possible, sometimes as small as 3 inches long. This was considered the height of a woman's beauty. Grandma's feet were half-bound, and when she was only 7, she fought to have them released. As a result, her feet were smaller than natural feet, but larger than bound ones. We loved to touch them and play with them. If she refused to let us, we would tickle her until she panted with laughter. All my friends loved coming to our home because she was so friendly. She had lived in our alley for over 30 years without a single disagreement with any of the neighbors. Everyone loved her and respected her. Dad had said that she had never been classified as a landlord's wife. She couldn't be, I told myself. Mom got home from work that evening looking nervous. She whispered to Dad and Grandma, and as soon as we finished dinner, she told us to go outside and play. "We have something to take care of," she said. I knew this had something to do with the Cultural Revolution. I wished she would just say so. We were too old to be fooled like little children. But I didn't say anything and went outside with the others. When it was nearly dark, Ji-yun and I went back home, leaving Ji-young with his friends. As we entered the apartment, I smelled smoke, acrid and choking. I looked around in alarm, but Grandma was sitting alone in the main room, showing no sign of worry. "Grandma, is there a fire?" we shouted anxiously. "Don't you smell the smoke?" "Hush, hush," Grandma pulled us to her quickly. "It's nothing. They're just burning some pictures." We looked puzzled. "Your mother heard today that photos of people in old-fashioned long gowns and mandarin jackets are considered for olds, so your parents are burning them in the bathroom." "Can we go watch?" I loved looking at pictures, especially pictures of all those uncles and aunts I had never met. Grandma shook her head. I winked at Ji-yun, and we both threw ourselves into her arms, begging and pleading. As always, she gave in and went to the bathroom door to ask Mom and Dad. Mom opened the door a crack and let us in. The bathroom was filled with thick smoke that burned our eyes and made us cough. Dad passed us a glass of water. "We can't open the window any wider," he said. "The neighbors might notice the smoke and report us." Mom and Dad were sitting on small wooden stools. On the floor was a tin washbowl full of ashes and a few pictures disappearing into flames. At Dad's side was a stack of old photo albums, their black covers stained and faded with age. Dad was looking through the albums, page by page, tearing out any pictures that might be for olds. He put them in a pile next to Mom, who put them into the fire. I picked up one of the pictures. It was of Dad, sitting on a camel when he was about 6 or 7 years old. He was wearing a wool hat and pants with suspenders, and he was laughing. Grandma, looking very young and beautiful and wearing a fur coat, was standing beside him. "Mom, this one doesn't have long gowns or anything," Ji-yun said. "Can't we keep it?" "The Red Guards might say that only a rich child could ride a camel. And besides, Grandma's wearing a fur coat." She threw it into the fire. Mom was right, I thought. A picture like that was for olds. The flames licked around the edges of the picture. The corners curled up, then turned brown. The brown spread quickly toward the center, swallowing Grandma, then the camel, and finally Dad's woolen hat. Picture after picture was thrown into the fire. Each in turn curled, melted, and disappeared. The ashes in the washbowl grew deeper. Finally, there were no more pictures left. Mom poured the ashes into the toilet and flushed them away. That night I dreamed that the house was on fire. By the third day, Ji-young and Ji-yun had tired of spending their days in the park, so they stayed home with our fourth aunt. I was bored too, but I wanted to keep Grandma company, so I brought a book and bought a pomegranate. Pomegranates had so many seeds that they took a good long time to eat, and I had plenty of time to spare. I sat on our usual bench, prying the juicy red seeds out of the fruit and slowly sucking on them one by one, staring at the fleecy white clouds. One cloud looked like a two-humped camel, and another looked like an old man whose long white beard nearly reached the ground. The camel was leading the old man slowly past. Grandma coughed, and I looked at her, but she was staring into the distance. In the 3 months since the Cultural Revolution had started, changes had been so constant that I often felt lost. One day, the conservative faction were revolutionaries that defended Chairman Mao's ideas. The next day, the opposite rebel faction became the heroes of the Cultural Revolution. I heard that even Chairman of the Nation, Liu Shaoqi, and General Secretary Deng Xiaoping were having problems. No one knew what would happen tomorrow. I wondered what I would be doing if I had been born into a red family instead of a black one. Searching people's houses? Hating landlords and rightists? Of course I would hate them. I hated them even now. I hated my grandfather, just as I hated all of Chairman Mao's enemies. But I had felt sorry for old Chan, even though he was wrong. And I did not know if I could hate Grandma, if she was officially classified as a landlord's wife. The harder I tried to figure things out, the more confused I felt. I wished I had been born into a red family so I could do my revolutionary duties without worrying. When we got home, the mop was still hanging from the balcony. A week had passed, and still nothing had happened. I waited anxiously, not knowing what I waited for. It was late in the afternoon.
"Ji-young's been fighting again," Ji-yun announced as soon as she saw him walk in.
His T-shirt was covered with dirt, and one sleeve was half torn off. He carried a broken-strapped sandal.
"What happened?" Grandma rushed in from the kitchen.
"They robbed me. They took my army cap."
He wiped his face with his sleeve and angrily threw his sandal on the floor.
"Robbed you? You must have done something to upset them," I scolded. "Why would anybody just grab your cap for no reason? You shouldn't be so ornery to people. Don't go making more trouble for us."
"How can you say that? I was just minding my own business, looking for crickets. They wanted to trade a cricket for my cap, and when I said no, they just took it."
"Who were they? Do you know them?"
Ji-young nodded grimly.
"They won't get away with this, I swear."
The army cap was one of Ji-young's treasures. It wasn't one of the ordinary olive-green caps you could buy in a store. It was a real army cap that he had gotten from his friend Ming Ming's father, a Liberation Army veteran. It had been washed and sun-bleached until it was nearly white, and anybody could see at a glance that it was the real thing. All the boys envied his cap. No wonder he was so angry.
"Well, it's only a hat. Forget about it. It's not worth stirring up trouble."
Grandma took out her sewing kit to mend his shirt.
"Just wait. I'll get it back," he said, more to himself than to us.
"Chairman Mao didn't say that I can't wear an army cap."
I turned to him attentively.
"What do you mean? Who said that you couldn't?"
"They said it. They said, 'What's a black whelp like you doing with a real army cap?'"
His eyes flashed with anger.
Now I understood. Calling him a black whelp was the real cause of the incident. Of course a boy like Ji-young would rather fight than take an insult like that. I wished I could protect him, but there was nothing I could do. I suddenly remembered that An Yi's uncle used to be a mechanic in the army. Maybe he would still have an old cap. I decided to ask An Yi about it. In a little while, Ji-young disappeared. I was sure he had gone to find his buddies, Xiao Cheng and Ming Ming.
Xiao Cheng and Ming Ming were our neighbors. Despite the fact that they were both 3 years older than Ji Yong and all three of them attended different schools, the three boys were close friends. In our alley, they were known as the Three Musketeers because they were always together. Xiao Cheng's father had been our district superintendent. Now he was suspended and under investigation for being a capitalist follower. Ming Ming's father had been the party secretary of the Shanghai Institute of Political Science and Law and had been under arrest at the institute for several weeks. He had been accused of being a traitor. Their family problems drew the three black whelps together more than ever. The next afternoon, when Grandma and I came back from the park, Ji Yong was not at home. He was not home at dinner time either. I went to Xiao Cheng's and Ming Ming's houses, but none of the boys were there.
"Where did he go?" Grandma scolded. "How could he miss dinner?"
I was worried. I was sure that he and his friends had gone to get the cap back. I should have mentioned An Yi's uncle, I thought, but I knew it would not have made any difference. If Ji Yong decided to do something, nothing I said would stop him. He was going to get hurt, and probably get the family in more trouble. At 8:30, he came in. He had a black eye, and he was limping, but he had a smile on his face.
"Were you fighting again?" Mom snapped. "Don't you think we have enough to worry about without you fighting, too?"
"We got my cap back!"
He raised it triumphantly.
"Look, the brim's been torn off!"
Ji Yun snatched the cap out of his hand.
"You got a black eye for a rag like this?" I asked.
"It was worth it," he said. "They won't dare push me around anymore." I bit back the scolding I wanted to give him and got him a cold towel for his eye.
Early in the morning, Song Po Po rushed upstairs to tell us the news. All the neighbors were saying that a knife had been found in the communal garbage bin. The neighborhood dictatorship group had declared this to be an illegal weapon, so the entire bin had been searched and some incompletely burned pictures found. In one of them, they recognized my fourth aunt. Because my fourth uncle had fled to Hong Kong right before liberation, her family was on the neighborhood party committee's list of black families. The weapon was automatically associated with the pictures, and that was enough for Six Fingers to report to the powerful neighborhood party committee. All day we were terrified. Grandma and the three of us went to the park immediately after breakfast. This time, none of us wanted to play. We just sat together on Grandma's bench.
"Will the Red Guards come?" Ji Yun asked.
"Maybe they will, sweetie," Grandma answered. "We just don't know." She took out her knitting. I tried to do the same, but I kept finding myself staring into space with no idea of where I was in the pattern. Ji Yun and Ji Yong ran off to play, but always came back to the bench after a few minutes. At 4 o'clock, Grandma sent me to see if anything was happening at home. I cautiously walked into the alley, alert for anything unusual, but there was no sound of drums or gongs or noise at all. The mop was still on the balcony. I looked into our lane. There were no trucks. Everything seemed calm, and I told Grandma it was safe to go home. Mom and Dad both came home earlier than usual. Dinner was short and nearly silent. Soon after dinner, we turned the lights off and got into bed, hoping that the day would end peacefully after all. I lay for a long while without sleeping, but finally drifted into a restless doze. When I heard pounding on the door downstairs, I was not sure whether it was real or a dream. It was real. I heard my cousin, Yo Mei, ask bravely, "Who's there?" Six Fingers' voice replied, "The Red Guards. They're here to search your house. Open up." They rushed into Fourth Aunt's apartment downstairs. At first, we could not hear much. Then we heard more. Doors slamming. A cry from Hua Hua, crash after crash of dishes breaking overhead, and the indistinct voices of the Red Guards. By this time, we were all awake, but no one turned on a light or said anything. We all lay and held our breaths and listened,
trying to determine what was going on downstairs. No one even dared to turn over. My whole body was tense. Every sound from my fourth aunt's room made me stiffen with dread. 30 minutes passed, then an hour. In spite of the fear, I began to feel sleepy again. I was jolted awake by shouts and thunderous knocks. Someone was shouting Dad's name. "Zheng Xireng, get up! Zheng Xireng!" Dad went to the door.
"What do you want?"
"Open up!" Six Fingers shouted. "This is a search in passing. The Red Guards are going to search your home in passing."
We often asked somebody to buy something in passing or get information in passing, but I had never heard of searching a house in passing. Dad opened the door. The first one in was Six Fingers, wearing an undershirt and dirty blue shorts and flip-flops. Behind him were about a dozen teenaged Red Guards. Though the weather was still quite warm, they all wore tightly belted army uniforms. Their leader was a zealous, loud-voiced girl with short hair and large eyes.
"What's your relationship with the Zhengs living downstairs?"
the girl yelled, her hand aggressively on her hip.
"He is her brother-in-law,"
Six Fingers answered before Dad could open his mouth.
"Oh, so you're a close relative," she said,
as if she only now realized that.
"Leniency for confession, severity for resistance. Hand over your weapons now, or we will be forced to search the house."
She stood up straight and stared at Dad.
"What weapons?" Dad asked calmly. "We have no..."
"Search!"
She cut Dad off with a shouted order and shoved him aside. At the wave of her arm, the Red Guards behind her stormed in. Without speaking to each other, they split into three groups and charged toward our drawers, cabinets, and chests. The floor was instantly strewn with their contents. They demanded that Mom and Dad open anything that was locked, while we children sat on our beds, staring in paralyzed fascination. To my surprise, it was not as frightening as I had imagined through the weeks of waiting. Only Little White was panicked by the crowd and the noise. She scurried among the open chests until she was kicked by a Red Guard. Then she ran up into the attic and did not come down. I watched one boy going through the wardrobe. He took each piece of clothing off its hanger and threw it onto the floor behind him. He went carefully through a drawer and unrolled the neatly paired socks, tossing them over his shoulder one by one. I turned my head and saw another boy opening my desk drawer. He swept his hand through it and jumbled everything together before removing the drawer and turning it upside down on the floor. Before he could examine the contents, another one called him away to help move a chest. All my treasures were scattered on the floor. The butterfly fell out of its glass box. One wing was crushed under a bottle of glass beads. My collection of candy wrappers had fallen out of their notebook and were crumpled under my stamp album. My stamp album. It had been a birthday gift from Grandma when I started school, and it was my dearest treasure. For 6 years, I had been getting canceled stamps from my friends, carefully soaking them to get every bit of envelope paper off. I had collected them one by one until I had complete sets. I had even bought some inexpensive sets with my own allowance. I loved my collection, even though I knew I should not. With the start of the Cultural Revolution, all the stamp shops were closed down because stamp collecting was considered bourgeois. Now I just knew something terrible was going to happen to it. I looked at the Red Guards. They were still busy moving the chest. I slipped off the bed and tiptoed across the room. If I could hide it before they saw me. I stooped down and reached for the book.
"Hey, what are you doing?" a voice demanded.
I spun around in alarm. It was the Red Guard leader.
I didn't do anything, I said guiltily, my eyes straying toward the stamp album.
A stamp album, she picked it up. Is this yours?
I nodded fearfully.
You've got a lot of four-olds for a kid, she sneered as she flipped through it.
Foreign stamps, too, she remarked. You little xenophile.
I'm not... I blushed as I fumbled for words. The girl looked at Ji Yong and Ji Yun, who were still sitting on their beds, watching, and she turned to another Red Guard. Get the kids into the bathroom so they don't get in the way of the revolution. She threw the stamp album casually into the bag of things to be confiscated and went back downstairs. She didn't even look at me. Inside the bathroom, we could still hear the banging of furniture and the shouting of the Red Guards. Ji Yun lay with her head in my lap, quietly sobbing, and Ji Yong sat in silence. After a long time, the noise died down. Dad opened the bathroom door, and we fearfully came out. The apartment was a mess. The middle of the floor was strewn with the contents of the overturned chests and drawers. Half of the clothes had been taken away. The rest were scattered on the floor, along with some old copper coins. The chests themselves had been thrown on top of each other when the Red Guards decided to check the walls for holes where weapons could be hidden. Grandma's German clock lay upside down on the floor, with a little door on its back torn off. I looked for my things. The wing of the butterfly had been completely knocked off the body. The bottle holding the glass beads had smashed, and beads were rolling all over the floor. The trampled candy wrappers looked like trash. And the stamp album was gone forever. As bad as our apartment was, my fourth aunt's apartment was even worse. She had been given lots of fine china which she had married, all of it beautiful, and some of it antique. Now it was all destroyed. The Red Guards had carried it up to the roof and smashed it in the big concrete laundry sink. Broken pieces filled the sink and were scattered all over the roof. 2 days after the search, we were still cleaning up. After I put my desk drawer back in order, I began on the wardrobe. One by one, I picked up all the clothes, folded them, and put them away. I picked up one of Dad's white shirts and suddenly flushed with embarrassment and anger. My sanitary belt. It was lying on the floor, not even covered by its blue plastic bag. Without thinking, I rolled it up and threw it angrily into the back of the wardrobe. This, of all things, was private. It was a girl's secret. I never even let Dad or Ji Yong see it. Every time I washed it, I covered it with a towel while it dried in the sun. Now, one of those Red Guards, probably a boy, had looked at it, had held it. I felt as if I had been stripped naked in public. Home, I thought. Wasn't a home a private place? A place where the family could feel secure? How could strangers come and search through our secrets? If Grandpa was a landlord, they could confiscate all his things. But I was not a landlord. Why did they have to search through all my things? I sat on the stool resentfully. An Yi came in, leaned against a chest, and looked around the ransacked room. I turned away. I could not bear pity and sympathetic looks, even from An Yi. She stood for a while, and then started to pick up books and put them back on the shelves. She looked thin and fragile. Her face was expressionless. I suddenly remembered her grandmother under the white sheet, and everything became clear. We had a bad class status. That was why An Yi was not allowed to wear mourning bands or even cry aloud for her grandmother. That was why my house was searched and strangers could come in and do whatever they wanted. It was just a simple fact. Why should I ask why? There was absolutely nothing I could do to change it. I wiped away my tears and joined An Yi in tidying up the things on the floor.